just completing the first part of the United Kingdom in our through our class program. This is the fifth quarter, and we do have folders that are created. They're in the back on the bench as you exit. So if you need any right now, I think Tim can grab some and distribute them. Tim and I will be teaching this quarter, and look forward to that. I don't know if y'all will look forward to that, but I guess I will. All right. Okay. So just as a little bit of a review, what is the sin that we just studied in 2 Samuel chapter 12? What is the sin that set up a number of the events that we're going to be studying this quarter? What sin just occurred? David's life. Bathsheba, right? David and Bathsheba. And that is a pretty significant turn in his life. He's still considered a man after God's own heart. So a lot about his reaction to that. But how did he react when he was approached by Nathan? Okay, I'm used to a lot more interaction than this. So I don't think you really want me to lecture. And then I can't hear James in the back. He tried. There we go. He was penitent. So he, when he realized that story that Nathan gave him, right, was about him, he immediately reacted to that, realized he had sinned and turned away, right? Tried to make changes immediately. Now did God actually forgive David? Absolutely he did. But a lot of what we're going to see this quarter is, were the consequences of that action ever removed from David? No. So we learn a little bit about sin, right? And we learn a little bit about the consequences of sin. And we will see that in action as we go throughout this entire quarter. So, just as a recap, 2 Samuel 12 in verses 11, 12, and then again in 14, let's read that quickly. 2 Samuel 12, 11, 12, and 14 says, "Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against you from your own household. I will even take your wives before your eyes and give them to your companion, and he will lie with your wives in broad daylight. Indeed, you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and under the sun." Skip down to 14. "However, because by this deed you have given occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born to you shall surely die." We will begin in chapter 13 here, but there are kind of four points here that deal with the consequences that David has to deal with. Okay, the sword's not going to depart from his house. Evil's raised up from within his own family. His wives will be taken by a close companion, and the child born to Bathsheba will die. Now, we just finished chapter 12, and the child born to Bathsheba has already passed. Right? And he gets up immediately and begins to go about because he mourned while the child was still alive and sick. But once that occurred, he moved on. All right. So today, in chapter 13, is Amnon's sin. Okay. So we have Amnon, who is the oldest son of David. Absalom, who's actually David's third son by Maacah. And Tamar, who is his sister. And then we have this other individual that is Jonadab, who would be all of their first cousins. So Absalom and Tamar are the half-brother and sister of Amnon. So as we begin reading this section of chapter 13 of 2 Samuel, we see that verse 2, Amnon was so frustrated because of his sister Tamar that he made himself ill because she was a virgin and it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything. So he desires his sister in the first verse. She's a beautiful lady and he desires to be with her, but he's just making himself sick over this. So what does he do in verse 3? He gets some advice from Jonadab. And what's Jonadab's advice to Amnon? Is it to turn away from the sin, to make sure that he doesn't engage in anything like that, or... That's right. He schemes a plan in which she can be alone with him, right? And Amnon then immediately takes that plan into action. And so he pretends like he's ill. David comes to visit him. He tells David, what I need is for my sister Tamar to come and actually, you know, make me some bread, right? And so he sends for her. She comes into the house. She proceeds with making this bread, but then he clears the house so it's only Tamar and him in the house. It says he goes into the bedroom, asks her to come in there, and then he subdues her. She tries to plead with him. But then he violates her. He rapes her. And I guess there's two very sad pieces to this, right? The fact that he had this passion for her, that he raped her. Then the very next verse in 2 Samuel 13, verse 15, it says, then Amnon hated her with a very great hatred, for the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, go away. So we have these points here. Let me see here. So in 2 Samuel 13 and 14, I mean 13 verses 14 and 15, he acts on his passion. He acts on his sin. Yet then, what does that sin do to fulfill him? It immediately turns away, right? It immediately just allows him to reject her. So very, very sad story here. But we can ask the question, what should the consequences be for this act? Someone turn to Deuteronomy 22. What's that? That's right. So he committed an act that was condemned, and the penalty of that act was death. So in verse 25, really through 29, but 25 through 27, talks about the sin of rape. Okay. And the results of raping somebody under the old law is death. Right? Now, 28 and 29 talks about, being with a girl who's a virgin and laying with her and then having to, you know, pay the dowry to the father of that one, and then having to marry her, remain with her the rest of their days. But either way, he has an obligation under the law, and really in this case I think the rape piece is his punishment should be death, right? But we have a problem, because what happened in chapter 12 with David? He had a sin himself, and what were their consequences for that sin under the law? What's that? Yeah. Right. So, he had death as well by stoning, but he had death as a punishment for him as well. So, do you think that's going to affect the way David approaches this problem? I mean, many of us know the story and we know the answer to that, right? Yes, it is. I think it has a significant impact on the way David tries to handle the situation. So Amnon kicks Tamar out of his house in verse 15, and then she is very saddened by this, right? She's outside. The virgin daughters of the king wore long sleeves, so she tore her sleeves off. She put ash on her head. She's walking, and obviously very distraught. And her brother, Absalom, comes up to her. It would help if I got back into 13. Comes up to her, and in verse 20, what does Absalom say to her when he sees her? His first words out of his mouth. Right. So he says, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? That's right. He tells her, don't basically just hold off, right? He himself is coming up with a plan. He's going to handle this situation himself. He wants her to just, to hold her peace. And I, every time I read this part, I find this as it strikes me. Why would Absalom, the first thing he did when he saw his daughter Tamar, or his sister Tamar, why would his reaction be, have you been with Amnon? Right? So it doesn't seem to me that whatever Amnon's feelings were toward her were necessarily hidden, at least from everyone. Because he immediately comes out with that statement about, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? So, in verse 21, we see that David hears of this act, right? And it says he was very angry. And then what else does it say about what David did to take action or what happened? Right? Nothing, because it moves on to verse 22 and says, and Absalom did not speak to Amnon either good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. And so we have some period of time now that is passing. And Absalom has come up with his own revenge, right? Obviously nothing else has really been done. And we see Amnon, apparently just moving on. We don't see anything else about him. But 2 years go by. It says there's this sheep shearing up in the area of Belhazar. And he invites all the king's sons. He actually invites the king, but David refuses and said no. And in verse 25, and let's see. 25, David refuses to go with him, says, but go ahead, and you know, there's no reason for us to be a burden to you. And in 26, Absalom specifically asks, please let my brother Amnon go with us. And it says, and the king said to him, why should he go with you? Right? But Absalom urges and is allowed, and so all the brothers, all the sons of the king, come up to Belhazar with Absalom. And after the sheep shearing, it's typically a large banquet that's held afterwards as custom. So Absalom tells his own servants to wait until Amnon is, you know, merry and then, you know, strike him dead. And so they do that. And then Absalom flees to an area called Geshur. Okay. So, So if we look on the map here, you see one of the arrows at Jerusalem, then up to the north and east, right? You see Beth-Hazor, and then way up to the northeast, you see Geshur. Now, why would Absalom run off to Geshur? You know, in 2 Samuel chapter 3, it talks about who Absalom is and who his mother is. That's right. So that would basically be going up to where his grandfather is. Right? His mother was the daughter of the king of Geshur at that time. So he would be going back out to stay with his mother's family up in Geshur and hide out, basically. So Amnon is struck down. Absalom races off to go, Absalom races off to go away to hide himself because he knows that his punishment for that is death, right? To strike down, to kill somebody, to murder someone. And King David hears immediately, or pretty quickly, right? All the king's sons are dead except for Absalom, right? And so David obviously very upset by that. But then we see the young man in Jonadab begin to have this conversation with David, right? And what does Jonadab realize? He says, it's probably not all your sons. I bet Amnon's dead. And why does he say that? Sure. So Absalom is standing there and waiting, right, for now 2 years. And allowing this plot to thicken and for him to figure out how he's going to do something back to Amnon. And Jonadab knows exactly what happened because he advised Amnon to do it, right? And he realizes that Absalom's revenge on Amnon is probably going to be to kill him at some point, right? Certainly wants to. And now that he hears the word, he knows that Absalom probably doesn't have much against the rest of the sons. He wasn't doing this as a move to, you know, make himself king. That's tomorrow. Or that's Wednesday. He's not doing this to make himself king. He's doing this as a revenge on his sister. And so they have this exchange, and sure enough, at the end of the 13th chapter, we see that Jonadab is right, and King David realizes that, you know, all of his sons do come back. And he's very sad because who is not there with him now? Amnon, right, who's passed away, and Absalom, who's run off to another land. So several years go by, right, about three, and then we see in chapter 14, as we go into the new chapter, that Joab perceives that the king's heart was inclined toward Absalom. It's been enough time. The king still wants Absalom to be around. And so Joab devises some plan. Right? So that plan is, if I can get the... That plan is that he's going to bring this, what they call a wise woman. Right? He's going to bring this wise woman from Tekoa. And he says he puts the words in her mouth in verse 3. So he creates this story about this woman having two sons and one struggled with the other and killed the other one. Then the family wanted to exact the revenge that they should on the one who was the murderer, and that would leave her, you know, without any heir, and her husband who has passed without any heir. And so David listens to this story, and what's David's reaction to this? What does he tell the woman? It's wild. You know, I teach the high schoolers this, and I won't do this to y'all just because mainly because we're broadcasting, but I tell them all, I will stand here until somebody says something. So just use that if you're teaching the kids, right? People get very uncomfortable with silence. Okay, so he tells the woman from Tekoa, hey, don't worry about it. I will send word, right? I'll make sure that that doesn't happen. I'll protect him. So is this the first time David has been told a story that is not really the point of the story? That's how Nathan delivered the message to him about Bathsheba, right? And so she says, can I ask you a question, right? And that was in verse 12 of chapter 14. And then she opens up, and let's read, I'll read 13 through 16 or 13 through 17 in 2 Samuel chapter 14. Says the woman says, why then have you planned such a thing against the people of God? For in speaking this word, the king is as one who is guilty, in that the king does not bring back his banishment, for we will surely die, and are like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Yet God does not take away life, but plans ways so that the banished one will not be cast out from him. Now the reason I have come to speak this word to my lord the king is that the people have made me afraid. So your maidservant said, let me now speak to the king. Perhaps the king will perform the request of his maidservant. For the king will hear and deliver his maidservant from the hand of the man who would destroy both me and my son from the inheritance of God. Then your maidservant said, please let the word of my lord the king be comforting, for as the angel of God, so it is my lord the king to discern good and evil. May the Lord your God be with you. So she tells him this comment. David then realizes someone else is behind this, right? And he realizes quickly that it is Joab who has set this woman up to come into him and talk to him. So, David's willing to protect her son, and she kind of asks, why is he not willing to protect his own? Right? And so he brings Joab in. He talks to Joab in verse 21 and allows Joab to bring back Absalom. Right? So Absalom goes and he retrieves, or Joab goes and retrieves Absalom from Geshur. David doesn't face the situation even when Absalom gets back. And he tells Joab, do not allow him to see my face. And so that, Absalom actually lives two full years. If you go to verse 28, Absalom lives two full years in Jerusalem. And doesn't even see the king's face. That's a long time. How long has he been in hiding in Geshur? I don't think we went over that. 3 years, right? So here's a little timeline of kind of what's occurred, right? So we have Amnon's incident with Tamar that happens, and then we have 2 years of this, you know, I guess boiling up of frustration about what am I going to do, right? Then I exact the revenge as Absalom, right? I exact that revenge, and I run off to my mother's family, and I live there for 3 years, basically banished from my home. I'm allowed to return, but when I return, my father doesn't even want to see me, right? And so it's another 2 years. And all of this, I believe, or I place on the fact that, right, David doesn't react in any way, really, unfortunately, to what occurred in the very beginning. But is this not part of what he has said his consequences are going to be, this evil that occurs in his family? So very, very sad time in David's life. And it doesn't get easier from here. Right? On Wednesday, Tim will talk about what happens now after Absalom is back. And I think you can begin to see, remembering this timeline, you can begin to see what and why Absalom may do what he does if we remember all that has occurred. So now we kind of get to, you know, the whole part of the lesson, like what does that really mean for us? Okay. So one point I have is life after sin. Even when your sin is forgiven, what is life after sin? Consequences, right? It's difficult. They still exist. Just because you're forgiven doesn't mean that we can not have anything else that occurs because of that, right? Very, very difficult, very important for, I think, all of us as parents. That's what we hammer into our own children, right? That it's not about you're never going to make a mistake. It's that the mistakes that you do make have consequences, and you really need to consider all of the consequences that happen. Because you will make a mistake, right? And, you know, I think one of the easiest things that we can take away from this is understanding that, you know, the devil always tries to make us think that this sin is going to make us so happy, right? That whatever it is that we want to do, however we want to do it, is going to be so great. But what happens? If we look at Amnon and his deep desire and his drive for his half-sister, right? He wanted her so bad. He raped her because he wanted her so bad. And then almost instantly, what occurred? Yeah, he hated her, right? He was so disgusted. He wanted her to just leave immediately. Yet, he was convinced, to the point that he was ill, right, in the beginning. He was so convinced that he would have so much pleasure if he could just have that. Right? Instead, he had that, and he realized that that's not really what he wanted. Right? So, how about our own previous sins, and does that change the way we deal with sins in others? You think that affected David? It's hard when you have committed a sin yourself that you realize is grievous, right? And in this case, David committed a sin. He knows that he himself should have been killed, right, under the law. Now, his own child does that. And what are some of the questions that we would ask as parents? I couldn't do that to my own child, right? Especially when I've committed sins that are just as bad, right? That deserve the same punishment. So how could I exact this punishment on my own child when I know that I haven't, right? So I think one of the points that is brought out in Bob's book, and we're going through that, through the book of, you know, Give Us a King. What is the difference between David's reaction to his sin and apparently the difference in Amnon's reaction and his sin? That's right. So I'll just repeat so that others can hear, but there's no indication that Amnon ever repented of his sin and certainly didn't do what was right by his sin. David, even though he sinned, he brought in Bathsheba as his wife. He took care of her. he repented fully, right? So he took responsibility for his. It seems that Amnon did not, right? Just moved on. And so there's a very, very significant difference in the way that their heart is towards sin that we see here. But another piece I think that is important that goes along with this, that's actually what that says, right? Is that David's reaction to his own sin versus, David's reaction to Amnon's sin. Okay. That when he's confronted with something that he's done himself, he immediately tries to make it right, but now he's confronted with a situation where something that his son has done, and what does he do? What's David's reaction to something that someone, specifically his son, has done here? He ignores it and wants it to go away, right? If I pretend that it didn't happen, right? If I bury my head, then it just goes away. So, yeah. Right.
In many ways, he was a failure as well.
I agree.
Because in this instance, he does nothing.
Right.
He just wants time for God. And it's not addressed, it's not dealt with. One of my favorite quotes is people first, but they do that.
Right.
And I don't know how many times all this is said.
All right. So to recap, and for some that may not be able to have heard all of what Jeff said, I'm not going to be able to repeat it all, but you know, ultimately David shows himself as a failure as a father here because he just thinks that, or he just allows things to just happen, right? He doesn't address them and he just wants time to wash that away, right? And so I agree. As great a man as David was and as prominent a character as he is in the Old Testament, you see a significant flaw in him, as he deals with his own children, right? We can't just sit around being good people ourselves, right? Having the right heart ourselves and then allow sin to just run rampant around us. And I mean, there's even a reference there about the fact that, I mean, if we know that evil is going on, so even in within the church itself, right? If we know that there's sin here and we just all want it time to just, we'll take care of it. We'll solve the problem. We're just not going to address it. We're just going to move on. Right? And what's going to happen? It's not going to fix itself. And so, sometimes, it's difficult to act, but time doesn't solve all the problems. All right. We've got about 5 more minutes. Got one more point here. So, what can we learn about the advice of our friends? You know, he's my first cousin even. We're good friends. Right? But what did he tell Amnon? Did he give Amnon good advice? Or did he tell Amnon what Amnon wanted to hear? Right? So we have to concentrate on whether advice that we get, does it align with God's will? Or does it align with my will? Because unfortunately, sometimes those aren't always aligned. Right? And so we have certainly some other lessons along that line. The next quarter is called what? After we have the United Kingdom, what's the next period of history? The divided kingdom, how does that begin? Solomon's son, we'll get to this quarter, right? But Solomon's son has the opportunity to meet with everyone. And what does he do? He gets two groups of people who are giving him advice. One, the young, hip, in crowd that's his buddies. Right? One, an older, more mature group of advisors that are trying to tell him, this is what you need to do to go forward to make this thing work. What does he do? It's Rehoboam. I said it's Solomon's son. It's Rehoboam. It's Jeroboam that comes up as the winner, right? Rehoboam, Solomon's son. And so he has this advice going on. And which direction does he choose? That's right. He likes the advice that makes him feel better, right? He wants his will done. And so he chooses that path and creates what is a significant rift in the entire nation of Israel. As 10 tribes to the north begin to follow Jeroboam, and Rehoboam becomes just that over Israel because of the promise that's given to David, right, that they will remain king. All right. Any other lessons? There's several questions in the book book that we didn't really go over, but are there any other questions or any other comments from today in this really sad story to begin, what is happening in David's family after his incident with Bathsheba? That's right. He had to deal with his own sin, and therefore it made him change the way that he reacted to many things. No, that's an excellent point that David did always inquire of the Lord, right? Early on, he was constantly shown, and we studied about that last quarter. It was about David and his inquiring of the Lord. But we don't see that here, do we? It's certainly not prominent. Not saying that he didn't do it, but he did not. It is not recorded that David's reaction to this was, oh no, I don't know what to do. I'm going to go inquire of the Lord. And it's important for all of us as parents, as grandparents, to constantly remember, no matter what our age is, that we need to, inquire of the Lord. Anything else? All right. Thank you. We'll study, the rest of chapter 14 and part of chapter 15 on Wednesday night. Thanks.